It's the Observation Deck with Gordo, brought to us by A Number One Air.
Thank you, Miller Ann. Well, today is the day. We got the Blood Moon happening. Once in a lifetime event. And I don't know whether this has already happened in the early morning hours or not, or whether it's going to be tonight. It's very unclear. But do you know what a blood moon is?
Yeah.
Okay, so the Earth is going to block out the sun's direct rays, which will turn the moon into a blood red orb. But what's so unusual about this is it's a two celestial event because that Mars is incredibly close to us right now. And so it's going to be like right up under the blood red moon, you will see Mars.
Wow.
It is the closest that it will come to us for the next 270 years.
Man. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think that's right now or tonight?
Tonight.
I think it's tonight,
yes. It gets dark again tonight.
Yeah. So they are saying this is the end of the world.
Interesting.
And by they, I mean the people who are saying it.
A selected few.
Yeah, there are several fundamentalist Christians who believe that this is the beginning of the apocalypse.
Even though we've had a ton of blood moons before, right?
Right.
Just not one with Mars for the last 200 years?
I've never quite understood why God needs those kinds of planetary events to start the end of the world.
Yeah.
Isn't that available to him at any point? I mean, he doesn't need the celestial event. It seems like we're conflating two things.
Yeah, you always want a good light show, don't
you? No, we're conflating the fact that before we understood these as natural celestial events, we thought it was God.
Mm-hmm.
Now we believe they're celestial events, but it's still God doing this.
So God,
we thought it was unnatural before.
God is looking at his watch saying, man, I really want to end the world now, but I got to wait for damn blood moon.
That moon to turn red.
Right. That's very strange. Hey, Giorgio, if you're looking to relocate to another palatial country home, Selena Gomez is selling her residence that is in Fort Worth.
Okay.
You ought to jump on that, Scro.
She has knocked more than $300,000 off the sales price.
Okay, to what? What's that at now?
This month, she was listing it for $3 million, and now she's dropped it to $2.7 million. She has yet to find a buyer. It's a 5-bedroom, 6.5-bath property on 1.5 acres. And she first put it on the market just months after buying it in 2015. That's what's so weird about, like, rich Hollywood people. Their real estate practices make me really nervous. Because it seems like they'll buy something and immediately change their mind and put it back on the market. Or you'll read, they bought it in 2009 for $30 million, and now they're selling it for $15 million.
Yeah, I know. But this one sounds like a really nice place, but it's not like Evander Holyfield's place that had like 15.5 bathrooms.
Wow, you're saying this place is no big deal.
No, I'm saying it sounds like it's
you
a manageable...
You are out of touch, my friend.
I think it sounds like a manageable place for a celebrity, unlike some of the $50 million places they get.
Well, when she first put it on the market, right after she bought it in 2015, she listed it for $3.5 million. So she's getting close to $1 million off the original asking price.
What part of Fort Worth?
You know, it does not even say here. It just says Fort Worth.
Hmm.
It's 10,000 square feet, the main residence.
That's big.
Isn't it odd that she would live in Fort Worth?
Well, she's from the area.
I know, but isn't it odd
that someone would stay near their home?
How many big, young, famous megastars live in Fort Worth?
Well, I moved out, so that's one less.
George, I think you ought to look into this. It's some mad cheddar, but you can do it, bro.
You ought to buy this for one of your kids or something like that.
Yeah. That's too many square feet.
Well, what do you think's the proper amount of square footage?
For me, about one tenth of that.
Let's
excuse me.
Talking about now.
Let's
the
say
next home I get will be.
Well, okay, you're about to be an empty nester,
right?
Are you thinking about downsizing?
No.
All right. I knew you wouldn't because you'll do the trick that that I think most people do. Well, can't downsize because kids like a place to come back to they're familiar with. And
I've never understood that.
We like our house. It's very manageable, and it's not like
manageable, but
huge.
And I don't know the square footage of your house, but let's say that you're in 5,000 square feet,
which we're not.
Why does a couple live in 5,000 square feet? And don't you think it's a little slightly wasteful?
I think a lot of them. I have a lot of friends who are becoming empty nesters, and they are downsizing. And everyone asks us, "Are we about to do that?" And right now, the answer is no. Someday we will, but no. I like where we live.
But there's a lot of kids who feel insulted if their parents downsize. Like, the kids have a big opinion on it. It's the parents. Yes. Huh. It's the parents' money, and if they want to downsize and move, the kids act like, well, that's inconvenient for our lives.
I'll just stay in college. I'm not going home to that spare house.
I've never understood the couple that becomes the empty nester, but I'm not saying you guys are doing this, George, because you guys have been there, but they keep the big house. And the reason is because we need guest rooms when our kids or when family come back over. And I've always thought, why do you have to be the hotel for everybody? If they're coming back as adults...
Yeah, it's their job to secure a residence to stay in.
They can go to HomeAway or they can get a hotel room or something. I think it's odd that we feel obligated for the one weekend a year that guests are coming to keep all of those guest rooms empty for the other 51 weeks.
Yeah. And that's the thing that a lot of people are doing. The trend in home building and home buying is we don't need to have all these extra guest rooms. And used to, people always thought, man, we got to have a guest room. Got to have a guest room. But you're exactly right. If you are running a hotel, let's say, and you only book out your hotel one or two nights out of 365... you've made a very bad decision.
Yes.
But when it comes to houses, some of you think, oh, that's a great decision. See, somebody stayed there 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad we had that guest room.
Right. Where you could have downsized and you could have put them up in the nicest hotel room in the Metroplex that weekend, and they would have loved it,
right,
by the way, for what you paid for that extra square footage.
Right.
And you would add so much left over.
So much left over. But it's just a way of thinking. It's a psychological thing that we feel like we need to have guest rooms.
I would say when it comes to my kids, I would hope they would want to stay with us instead of a hotel.
Yeah, but can't kids stay in a pull-out bed?
Yes, absolutely. Now, do you have to have a bedroom for all of... No, of course not.
Or stay in your bed.
Yeah.
Or maybe the tent that they slept in as a kid in the backyard.
Yeah, we'll break that out again.
Parents have stayed in the pull-out bed. They would have never had the kid to begin with.
So are you
so
saying...
It's for sale.
Are you saying sex doesn't happen in pull-out beds?
I'm saying that... pregnancy doesn't happen usually in.
Yeah, I know where you're trying, what you're trying to do, but it's a stupid play and don't run.
Oh, I get it. Sorry, I'm slow this morning. I get it.
God, how long did it take you to get that?
That took me a while.
That's not that obscure.
It was to me.
We just don't think like you.
You're even Catholic too. You should get it quicker than any of us.
Who was it that it publicly announced on our station that they were practicing pull and pray?
It was Becca.
That's right. It was Becca.
She said that some reason she was honest enough about her, said she wasn't on birth control. They just practiced pull and pray.
How that worked out.
She had no problem telling us that either.
Oh, no. She didn't.
All right, Gordo. Thank you. That's the ODEC. 642 on the ticket. Let's muse in the news with Gordo, brought to us by D&M Leasing and All Pro Foundation Repair.
One of your favorite country artists, Giorgio, is making waves.
Who's that?
Eric Church.
I don't know if it's one of my favorites.
You're a huge Eric Church fan.
I don't know about that.
He is one of the headliners at the Route 91 Festival in Las Vegas,
mm-hmm.
which was
the
scene
of
the 2017 massacre, deadliest mass shooting by an individual in modern U.S. history. Anyway, Eric Church is blaming the NRA for the attacks.
Well.
So Jason Aldean was the guy that was performing at the time when the gunman opened fire on the crowd and killed 58 people. And now Eric Church, speaking out about the incident in an interview with Rolling Stone, he blamed the NRA and gun lobbyists for being a roadblock to gun safety. And in the article, Church says, there are some things we can't stop, like the disgruntled kid who takes his dad's shotgun and walks into a high school, but we could have stopped the guy in Vegas. He says, I blame the lobbyist, and the biggest in the gun world is the NRA. I don't care who you are, you shouldn't have that kind of power over elected officials. To me, it's cut and dried. The gun show loophole would not exist if it weren't for the NRA. So at this point in time, if I were an NRA member, I would think I had more of a problem than a solution. And of course, as you can imagine, he doesn't go over so well with country music fans. He's being compared to the Dixie Chicks on social media, which, you know, even looking back at the Dixie Chicks thing, they took such a hit. And it was because Natalie Maines said, do you remember what she said? Do you remember just the first so phrase of what she said?
Just so y'all know.
Yeah, just so you know. We're on the good side with y'all. We do not want this war, this violence, and we're ashamed that the President of the United States is from Texas. Which, that all sounds well within free speech, and maybe we should just let that kind of stuff roll off of us.
The end of it was pretty offensive, but yeah. They were just speaking their minds.
But they, I wonder if their careers have finally recovered from that.
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I never hear of them anymore. Are they even
together? Oh, yeah, they're still playing. Mm-hmm.
Of course, they said this back in 2003 when they were in London, and we had the Iraq and the South Africa and the Iraq and Aretha.
Compared to where they were, I can't imagine. Let me look up their record sales.
That was the height of their fame, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, they disappeared for
a
while.
They got blackballed by country radio here. But they still sell out everywhere they go.
Do they?
Yeah. They still play big venues.
But are they playing the same size arenas?
That I don't know. That may have been cut down in size a little bit. In this country, anyway.
Yeah, okay. Domestically, probably.
What if the Dixie Chicks said that today about Trump? Let's say they didn't have a history of saying this about Bush. And some country artist comes out and says that at the beginning of a concert about Trump. Just so you know, we're ashamed that Trump comes from our home state of New York or whatever. Would that still have the same impact? Because the Trump supporter is... I mean, they...
Country music.
Just as supportive of Trump.
I would say a lot of country music fans are Trump voters.
It doesn't look like they've recovered. So when did they say that? 2003?
2003.
Their last number one album was... Or number one single was 2002.
Haven't been back there yet. No.
And since then, their best charting single was in 2006, and it was 36th on the country charts.
Yeah, that was back when... but I think now it's just... I don't know if they're just putting out as much music. But yeah, back then, I mean, they just wouldn't get played. They wouldn't get spins.
Yeah, it doesn't look like they've put out an album since 2006.
Think about how shell-shocked they were. They probably haven't recovered psychologically from it.
Yeah.
So you got to at least admire Eric Church for speaking his mind, knowing that it could really hurt his career.
Yeah.
I know. It's such a weird... It's not a business decision he made, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Are the Bird Dogs, are you ready to come out, Giorgio, and say anything controversial and risk the Bird Dogs' incredible career?
I don't know if we have an incredible career. We made a huge impact on the music world.
Like, what do you think about Trump?
Yeah, say something strong.
We got stories to do.
See, look at what a moral coward you are.
What?
Share your true
what
views.
Why do they even care what I think?
You have a platform.
You have a platform.
You're a country music star.
You're a huge country music star.
Not a huge. Maybe by weight, but outside of that, I'm really not a huge country
well,
music star.
Well, by whatever metric you go by. Come on. Tell us.
What? He's the president of the United States.
What do you think about the NRA?
What's the next story?
All right.
What do you think of the NRA?
What I don't really know too much about them. I'm not a member.
Mm-hmm.
I'm clearly a gun owner, but I'm not
I
a member
too.
Of the NRA. I just don't know. I hear them vilified a lot, and I always get a little bit suspect when I hear over-vilification.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I hear vilification, I'm afraid that a lot of times it's over-vilification. But I don't know. In this case, I don't know whether it's accurate or not. It does seem weird that they would just defend guns at all costs. I don't think they can. They don't do that, do they? Weren't they for the banning of bump stocks?
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's my problem with the NRA. I have no problem with them being in existence, and I have no problem with them fighting for the right to keep a gun in your hands or your house. My problem with them is they are so incredibly inflexible,
mm-hmm.
and that they subscribe to the theory, well, if we give an inch, they'll take a mile, and I just don't think that's the case.
Right.
I think there is common ground to be met, but they don't want to hear any argument from the other side, and I don't think that's the road to peace.
Facebook shares plunge. I mean, they got hammered yesterday. It dropped 19%.
What happened?
Well, it's all this, you know, it's all the controversy surrounding them.
But what happened yesterday?
I don't know what happened yesterday. I think they had to announce that they were doing stuff.
God. So tired of
No, they warned of short they warned of sharp downturns and slowdowns in their sales growth.
Okay.
So it was a financial thing that they released about their growth.
Well, good.
But it's investors are very skittish about them because they've lost such cultural cachet too. Mm-hmm. Anyway, tumbled 19%, which means that it wiped out $120 billion of shareholder wealth.
Damn, with a B.
Yes. $120 billion they lost in one day. It is largest one-day destruction of market value that a company's ever suffered.
Ooh. Well, you know what? If they hadn't been so sorry, they wouldn't have lost all that money. But they were, and probably still are, spying on us.
It says that more than half the returns in the S&P 500 stock index this year has been provided by just a handful of tech companies like Facebook and Apple and Google. Those companies are so big that they represent half of the S&P 500 gains this year. So it's scary when one of them takes a big tumble like this. John, go ahead.
I was going to say, I guess those commercials aren't working. You've seen those damage control commercials for Facebook, haven't you?
I have not. I don't know.
It's basically, we started off connecting people, and then something went wrong. But we're getting back to what we were. This is the way to stay connected.
You know, mm-hmm. I don't see commercials anymore.
Really?
Yes. And that's a problem, because half the time, anytime somebody's talking about commercials and, oh, yeah, like the Dilly Dilly, I had no idea what people were talking about for the first
few weeks. You're not a true friend of the crown. I am.
Everyone was saying that. Because I watch on-demand stuff. Or I watch DVR stuff.
Mm-hmm. Dilly Dilly.
Dilly Dilly.
Dilly Dilly.
George, didn't you hang out with the king
at
the Super Bowl?
I did. He told me I was a true friend of the crown.
John Schnatter, the founder and ousted former chairman of Papa John's International and best friend to Jerry Jones, he sued Papa John's yesterday. Said the company has not provided adequate response to his earlier request for internal documents about the accusations of his inappropriate behavior.
Did you think you would ever see Papa John's suing Papa John's?
No, especially not. It's not like he retired or anything. It's like a month ago he was on top of the world and he was Papa John. And then he's just had his ass handed to him so quickly. And this all comes about because of his quote,
"Colonel Sanders called blacks."
And then he used a terrible word.
N-words.
And he said that on some conference call.
And a big old cookie.
What if he had said the term N-word instead of the full one?
I think he would have been fine. But you just used it, and you're going to be fine, I think.
Well, I'm doing the news story reporting on him. And he's even saying that Colonel Sanders was doing this. When I first heard the story, I thought that they meant that Papa John said it about someone.
No, right. He just used the full word saying Colonel Sanders said it.
Right. And I'm trying to think if there's been another episode of someone quoting someone else and then that happens to them.
Didn't Norm use that word?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
And then he sternly warned Jared to never, ever
play that as a drop. So he was asking someone about the claim in the person's autobiography mm-hmm. that they were called
yes.
the N-word.
Yes.
And Norm asked him, but said the whole word.
Right.
Yeah.
But Norm's not suing Papa John's.
No.
I don't understand. Okay, this, I think, is fascinating. Do you guys watch any of Shark Week anymore?
No. Yeah, I watch some.
It's kind of lost its hold on the public, hasn't it? I mean, yeah. Used to Shark Week was a huge deal.
It's not the big deal that it used to be, but I think kids still get a little fired up about it.
Well, I think that this is really big.
For show.
I think this experiment is fascinating. All men are entertained. Entertained is not the right word. I would just say fascinated by the USS Indianapolis, right?
Yeah.
That's such an incredible story. So, this boat, World War II, takes a Japanese torpedo. It was immortalized in the famous monologue by Robert Shaw in Jaws when he talks about the USS
After
Indianapolis.
After it delivered the A-bomb, right?
Boom.
It delivered the A-bomb, and then on its
right.
way back, that's when it was hit.
So it's hit by this Japanese torpedo, and 1,196 men go into the water, and only 317 were left alive after 4 days, as these guys floated in the water, battling exposure and sharks.
Mm.
And sharks tore these guys up. And it's estimated that the sharks killed about 150 guys. Mm. As they're in the water. So, for Shark Week, these two military veterans spent 2 days and nights, so half the time.
I saw some of this.
They spent 2 days and nights in the water with man-eating sharks recreating the USS Indianapolis. So they had, of course, they were protected by a cage, but they have to be...
They were open swimming unless they felt it was dangerous, and then they would jump in the cage.
Wow. Oh, okay.
So they were open swimming, and they had sharks all around them.
Wow.
And several times they had to keep going underwater just to keep an eye on these sharks that were circling them. They were definitely in danger.
So they spent 43 hours with no food, no water, with the white-tipped sharks bumping against their cage and swimming around them.
Just a tip.
And they really tried to make it realistic. They blew up a boat where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And so
they had to
all
go in the water.
Yeah, and that's key because they had a ice chest of fish that was catapulted, I don't know, 100 yards away, and it floated back by them.
Ooh.
With a hole in it, and it was leaking, you know.
Chum,
and that's what got the sharks all fired up, and they had to get in the cage at one point.
They hallucinated at night. They used Paul DeGelder, one of the guys, his prosthetic arm to collect rainwater to drink. He lost his arm to a shark, I guess,
wow.
several years ago. And they cuddled each other to try to stop the hypothermia. They only had poles to ward off the sharks. And they say it's the most dangerous experiment in the history of Shark Week.
Wow.
So, and they purposely chose a place that had lots of white tips because that's believed to be the same kind of shark that took all the crew members of the USS Indianapolis.
Yeah.
I think this is incredible. I need to see this.
And they had a support boat nearby in case, you know, something really bad happened.
They say they were at times hundreds of yards away from that thing.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, they couldn't just fish them right out. It would take a while to get to them.
One of the things that they found was interesting is they said that the sharks become more inquisitive as they sense a human degrading.
Wow.
That's so creepy. One of the guys said, Paul and I talked about the USS Indianapolis in the water, and even though it was very uncomfortable, we can't imagine what it was like to have that sense of hopelessness those guys had. To see people being picked off around you from sharks, dying from exposure, drinking seawater, and deliberately drowning themselves, you cannot replicate that, and I would hope that no one would have to suffer that again. And that's the truth, man. As much as these two guys are going through for their little television show experiment, which is unbelievable, can you imagine actually being in those circumstances?
No.
And not only seeing the shark attacks one after the other, he says you never know when they're going to hit you. It's not like they just circle you and
nothing come
start
out of
attacking
nowhere.
You. Yeah. He said, you know, they basically taunt you all the time by just coming near you and just looking at you and keep moving. You never know when it's going to turn into an attack. Not only the sharks, but then just seeing the guys deliberately drowning themselves and saying their last words, saying goodbye to you. And you just can't. Or
awful.
Seeing the guy saying, hey, dude, stop, when he's just sitting there drinking seawater. Just, oh, okay, I'm so thirsty.
What a terrible way to go.
It's horrible.
Then I was reading just a quick hit about the captain of that ship, Charles McVeigh. He was court-martialed because there was evidence that he failed to zigzag to avoid the Japanese submarine firing at the ship.
Mm.
The Japanese commanders said a zigzag would have made no difference, but he was still court-martialed. He was found not guilty, but they said that he carried such a weight on his shoulders.
He had a lifetime of drinking, I guarantee.
Lifetime of drinking, and he eventually committed suicide in 1968.
Dang.
He couldn't take it.
Dang.
He would get cards from family members every Christmas, family members of those who were killed on board the Indianapolis, that said, Merry Christmas. Our family's holiday would be a lot merrier if you hadn't killed my son.
Oh, my gosh.
Merry Poor Christmas. Guy.
What if he did something wrong that caused all those men to die?
It was found that he was not
guilty
of that.
Are women as obsessed with the USS Indianapolis as guys tend to be?
No.
Why not?
Because they don't really care about history.
Dude!
That's what you always told me.
Did not! I said George always told me that.
I didn't say that.
All right, birthdays today. Norman Lear is 96.
Wow. Greatness.
All in the Family,
yep.
Maude, about a million other ones. Carol Leifer is 62. Isn't she the inspiration for Elaine Bennis on Seinfeld?
I think you're right.
It's Carol Leifer.
Yeah.
I think. Bill Ingvall is 61. Juliana Hatfield, the singer, 51. Julian McMahon is 50. I think he was on Nip Tuck, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Comedian Maya Rudolph from The Greatness of Idiocracy is 46 years of age today. George's cousin Pete Yorn is 44. Wasn't your cousin Pete Yorn all the time?
What? No.
Your cousin was a bassist for Pete Yorn constantly.
Not Pete Yorn.
Who?
Now I'm drawing a blank, but it wasn't Pete Yorn.
Pete Wentz, Pete, right?
No.
Pete,
if you don't love
you
Droge.
You used to brag about it all the
Pete
time.
Droge.
Yeah.
Pete Droge. Pete Yorn, no.
Jonathan Rhys Meyers is 41. Peggy Fleming, 70. Irv Cross, 79.
Ticket Zone.
Mm-hmm. And Bump Wills turned 66.
Oh, there
today.
You go.
And he still holds the Rangers' single season record for most stolen bases.
It'll never be broken.
It's amazing.
The Bumperoo.
All right, thanks. That's Muse, 732 on the ticket. We all went to practice yesterday. It was their first official practice here in Southern California. And Jason Garrett worked him hard for the full 2 hours. And after practice, Gordo caught up with a very famous Dallas Cowboy.
I sure did. You know, when you ask the kids that attend these training camp practices, who is their favorite Cowboy, there's always one name on the tip of their tongue, and that's Justin March Lillard. And so I caught up with him and asked him a few hard-hitting questions.
Hey, Justin, you got a moment?
Yes, sir.
do a sports interview for the ticket.
Okay.
Is this the best training camp you've ever been to?
Yeah. From the setup, and you know, obviously the weather's nice. And when you're part of Dallas Cowboys, you got a lot of fans that'll be out here. So just looking forward to it.
What's it like working for Jerry Jones?
I mean, it's everything you could imagine. Like I said, wearing that star is something special. You know, as a kid, I mean, everyone knew who the Dallas Cowboys was if you didn't know any other football team.
Who is Bob Lilly in your own words?
Bob Lilly. That was the...
Bob Lilly played quarterback?
You know what? Bob Lilly. I'm trying to see. When did he play? Years-wise.
Man, I think back in the 1890s, it seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, see, I didn't really know who he was, obviously, right. But coming here, you hear a lot about him. you see him all over the star. So just being that guy, I mean, just like Jason Witten, just like Zeke and Dak, and those guys are modern day. Like I said, anybody that plays for the star, I mean, you tend to hear the name. I mean, even if you don't know what position they play, even if you don't know where they're from or anything like that, you know the name. You've heard it before. So as opposed to some other low market teams, you might not know exactly who's in the Hall of Fame for those guys. But for the Cowboys, you hear Bob Lilly. You know he played for Dallas Cowboys. Whether you know what position he played or anything like that.
Yeah. How would you describe Jason Garrett's coaching style?
I would say demanding. Obviously, a lot of people might not think he's a player's coach, but he actually is.
Does he ever inspire you guys with, like, the famous Billie Jean King story?
He inspires, a couple of Michael Jordan stories. You got the San Antonio Spurs story, stuff like that. So there's a lot of stories that you tell, and I'm like, man, that's cool. That's cool that he got the experience that got to.
Jerry Jr., do you have much interaction with him on a day-to-day basis or maybe even daily?
I do not. I don't have much. Obviously seeing him around and stuff like that. But as far as like a lot of interaction, you know, I really don't. I just got back here in October, so I'm still trying to learn a lot of names and faces and stuff like that.
Are you boycotting Papa John's Pizza?
I'm not. I don't really get into all that. Obviously that has, you know, nothing to do with me, but I don't eat cheese anyway. So I'm not
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't eat cheese. You know, I'm
lactose intolerant?
Yep, lactose. So
don't you think that we need more tolerance today instead of more intolerance?
As far as like being able to eat the cheese and stuff like that, or what do you mean by that? Just,
well, I guess it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when people talk about tolerance, I guess they're talking about other things, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure exactly where that's going with that, but
what would you say is the state of race relations today in America?
Florida? I don't really know how to even answer that.
Florida.
I mean, I don't really have an answer for that either.
What about race relations between you and me?
For me personally, I don't see you any different than I see myself. Mm-hmm. But
I look about the same level of fitness. Yeah.
To me, I mean, you're a person, and obviously, I'm a huge, you know, Christ follower. So I believe that everybody's here for a reason. I believe that we're all children of God and stuff like that. So I don't see color. I see you as a human. I see, you know. And then when I get to know you, I know what your soul is like. You know what I mean? So I don't really. I mean, I've never seen color.
Mm-hmm.
And
on that same topic, or similar, did you hear about the death of Coco the gorilla, and were you at least grieving or saddened by that death?
No, I didn't really hear too much about that. Obviously, I heard about it, but I didn't really read up on it.
Do you remember what she was known for?
I do not.
She was the gorilla that could do sign language.
Okay, gotcha.
She could talk to humans.
Okay.
With sign language.
Gotcha.
If you could sign something to her now from beyond the grave, what would it be?
If I can sign something to her,
I'm probably over a house or.
You said, would I sign something over to her?
Sign something over the threshold of death to her.
Oh, as far as like words or anything like that?
Yeah.
It'd probably just be, you know, obviously she impacted a lot of people. Like you said, the things that she can do, which I wasn't aware of. I didn't really read into all that.
So it didn't impact you too much.
Right, it didn't impact me too much, but I'm sure for somebody it did. I mean, just you know, they'll probably say thank you or something like that, but it didn't really impact me.
But her presence still felt, obviously,
yeah, I mean, obviously,
the Cowboys.
You still heard about that and stuff like that. So probably, you know, just thank you for, you know, inspiring people or however they other mm-hmm. people saw, you know, mm-hmm. Coco. So
what about your future goals? Your wife, children?
Yeah, I'm married. I have a son. He's one.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
What's his name, if you don't mind sharing?
Jackson.
Jackson.
Yep. And
is that because he was like conceived in Jackson, Mississippi, or something like that?
No. His name's been God has been gracious. You know, just going through things that I've been through in the past. You know, I was blessed to have a son. So God was, you know, he was gracious to giving me that gift, and forever thankful.
What do you think is the biggest thing that you've had to overcome?
Biggest thing that I've had to overcome. I lost my dad and my brother in the same year, and in that same year I was on three different teams. I got signed the day of my brother's funeral by the Dallas Cowboys, so being able to keep that all in, you know, I wouldn't even say bottled up, but being able to accept it, attack it, and then be able to move on is probably the hardest thing I've ever had to do. So,
well, at least that's a positive thing that happened on that day, that tough day, as you got signed by the Cowboys.
Yeah, it was it was a blessing to be able to, you know, obviously be signed by the Cowboys and stuff like that, and obviously being able to bury my little brother, that was tough. It was tough, but then again, I had to go to work because I still have my son and my wife to provide for.
Right. Do you think human beings will eventually live to be like 125 years of age once technology catches up?
I think so. I think obviously, you know, different sciences and, you know, when it comes to food or, I mean, no matter what it is. But I think with technology, I think there's a chance that humans will be able to live longer or to be able to escape certain, you know, right. certain death sentences.
Do you think the Earth is flat or round?
Flat or round, Earth.
Hey, Jocko! Come on,
I think it's pretty flat.
So you don't believe in like it's a globe or a sphere?
Well, I mean, in TV shows I watch, you always see. It's funny because you always see aliens coming down into it. I mean, if it was a globe or shape like that, I don't think you would be able to get in. I mean, if you're able to come through a sky, I think mm-hmm. it's pretty flat.
Right.
My opinion.
But, you know, you got to keep everything in perspective, though, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah, good. Appreciate it. Take care. God bless.
Okay.
There's a lot to unpack there.
Did you understand why he believes that the Earth is flat?
Yeah, because shows he watches, the aliens come down.
They come through the sky.
And
how could they do that if the Earth wasn't flat?
Yep. I can't believe that he paused and then gave you the answer flat. I also couldn't believe he thought Bob Lilly played quarterback. What is going on?
He was such a sweet guy, but boy, could he pad an answer and just, you know.
Yeah, he could put a lot of verbiage in there.
Yes.
I also couldn't believe the repeated bear traps you were stepping in with him.
How many of those you step in?
God, man.
That's unfortunate. Well, I didn't know.
You have a gift.
I do not. I have no gifts.
Well,
there he is, Justin March Lillard.
Good luck to Justin March Lillard.
Fan favorite.
8:49 on the ticket.
Training camp edition of Gordo's Corner brought to us by Lunazul Tequila and Baker Brothers Plumbing and Air.
Thank you so much, Craig. Well, our president responded to Jerry, who yesterday said that the Dallas Cowboys were going to stand for the anthem, and Donald Trump, even though Jerry said it's not good when Donald speaks out about the whole anthem issue, he spoke out again about the anthem issue in response to Jerry. And he retweeted a guy's tweet that was quoting an article that said, "As far as the Dallas Cowboys, you know where I stand. The team knows where I stand. Our policy is you stand during the anthem, toe on the line." And Trump retweeted that and said, "Way to go, Jerry. This is what the league should do." So, Trump won't leave that alone.
No,
and it works, man. It works for the base. Big time.
Yeah, it plays to his audience really well.
Big time. And I think this helps the Cowboys.
Oh.
Because I think that Jerry is seen as a hero by most NFL fans by saying, "Hey, look, you put your toe on the line and you stand for our anthem."
Yeah, most fans want the players to stand, so, yeah.
And It says in this article, Stephen, the Cowboys executive vice president, took the position a step further Thursday, telling KTCK 96.7 FM that the players need to stand, quote, if they want to be a Dallas Cowboy.
That was when he was on with Norm and Donnie.
Right. Right.
On KTCK
96.7 FM. KTCK
96.7
FM.
Hey.
So. And you know what? Every guy here in camp wants to be a Dallas Cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I don't think they're going to have any problems with anybody staying in the locker room or protesting in any way. Now, like I said yesterday, they're afraid of Jerry. They fear Jerry.
Yeah, but don't you think that in a way it could boomerang on Jerry a little bit? Because if you publicly are the owner that says, my players are going to stand, I don't care what they think or feel, they're going to stand when the anthem is going on, then that player who would kneel feels like he is he's being embarrassed by the fact that he's just being told that, hey, you stand up and he's going to do it. And one of these players may break ranks because he's going to stand up to the guy who is publicly saying that he is not allowed to kneel.
Boy, I don't know. Yes, that's possible.
It could backfire.
But when you hear the organization say, if they want to be Dallas Cowboys, they will stand for the anthem, that's pretty strong. I mean, that's pretty clear cut. Now, if Dak Prescott takes a knee, is Jerry really going to cut him? That's the awkward thing for Jerry.
Right. I think it depends on who it is. But I think you're right, Gordo. It could backfire if you have an unforeseen incident. Because that weekend where Trump created that that firestorm was saying those SOBs
that
better not take a knee.
Increased the amount of people that took a knee.
Yes. And if he makes another type of statement like that, like right before opening weekend,
it can be seen as baiting these players to defy him.
And I think you could be right back where you were last year, where you had players like on this team meeting saying, what are we going to do?
Go away, baby.
And then the Cowboys came up with that thing in Arizona where they all held hands and walked out and took a knee and then stood up for the anthem.
Okay. Say that the one player is he's on the bubble. He's probably, you know, he's the last man on the roster. And he wants to kneel.
That's probably not a good idea.
Jerry would do well. Let's say he's wanting to quit football anyway. This is my big hypothetical. For whatever reason, he's wanting to quit anyway.
Right.
He and Jerry ought to go in cahoots. And he ought to kneel so he gets all the cred from his buddies and people who feel the same way as he does. And then Jerry gets rid of it, fires him. So then Jerry gets the benefit of it too, because then he looks like he took a stand and just kicked a guy off the team for kneeling. And so it works out for both their benefits if they work together on that and create a big incident, because Jerry would be seen as an NFL hero to a lot of America.
That's quite a hypothetical.
He actually fired a guy for kneeling. Now, where it gets tricky is, let's say that some lower-level player kneels, and because of their backroom players' meetings, Dak kneels with him. Kneels with him, and then it's like, well, I would have fired that player, but no, I can't now. Because I'd fire one, but not Dak.
I still think that player may get cut. Jerry would say,
but,
well,
but
yeah,
Dak doesn't.
Quarterback. Yeah.
Well, he was just first one I saw kneel. I just fired the first one I saw, and I happened to be that lower level player. What a mess of an issue.
I know.
But why do they, once again, why do the anthem?
Well, I think they've put themselves into a position now where they feel like they have to.
Yeah. Because can you imagine the NFL does away with the anthem, what Trump would say? This is the most un-American sport. Now they're not even going to recognize our country.
Well, how about this? How about they just do not show it on camera? I mean, they show the anthem being played, but you just take your crowd shots of people standing hand over heart. Why not? Why show the players? If you stop showing the players, don't the players...
Well, you've got local TV cameras there that are going to be shooting it, whether the network cameras are on live or not. And so if someone's making news by kneeling, the local guys will take a shot of it, and they'll play it on their newscast.
And you know, it's so wild to think that it wasn't that long ago that the players weren't out there for the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as if this dates back to the 1950s and the NFL has always stood on the line. We never really even paid attention to all this. And they didn't even they weren't even out there for the anthem.
Well, you know, one of my solutions was just have the, you could fix it with just the VO that the announcer guy does. Ladies and gentlemen, please stand or kneel to honor our national anthem.
Boy.
Because they're both seen as gestures of reverence. Mm-hmm. So you got it covered. Easy.
Yeah, I don't think
or just say, will the players please kneel for the national anthem out of respect for the national anthem. Kneel out of respect for the national anthem. And then the players are real confused as to, okay, what's my protest move now? I got to stand for the anthem to protest it. All right, so in other news, big Curb fans, all three of us.
Yes.
Giorgio, who bags on that show, Curb Your Enthusiasm.
I just don't watch it. I think it's great.
Yet
that you guys
say
like
you've watched 30 episodes.
Probably, yeah. And I think it had.
And I don't understand
really
why you would
funny.
Watch 30 episodes if you didn't think the show was great.
Yeah, it had a lot of funny elements. But after a while, I don't know. I thought with me, it's kind of run its course. How many more uncomfortable situations and scenarios could you really get into?
That's what's great about it, is he keeps finding uncomfortable situations. Well, the 10th season of Curb Your Enthusiasm was supposed to happen in December.
Uh-oh.
And hasn't been delivered, I guess, to HBO yet.
Why?
But the HBO programming president said that it will come out whenever Larry David feels ready. Talk about a guy who has complete control of his scene. Larry David. They'll just, whenever he delivers it, that's when he delivers it.
Wouldn't that be great? Hey, musers, do your next show whenever you feel like
it. Yeah, whenever you feel ready, y'all can go on the air. There was a 5-year lag between season 8 and season 9, but they don't think it'll be as long between 9 and 10 because J.B. Smoove, Ticket's Own, who plays Leon Black on that show, told The Hollywood Reporter, it's going to happen sometime this year. We're going to be going back to work. He knows because he's on the show.
Cool.
So he's already been given the... Go ahead. J.B. Smoove, funny?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I think he's really funny. He talks so fast. That voice of his is so weird on that show.
He and Larry are great together. They're such an odd pairing, but they work so well together.
Yeah, I've always thought he was funny.
And then speaking of television... You'll be interested in this, Giorgio. This has a sports tie-in, this television note. LeBron James has signed a deal with HBO. His friend Maverick Carter has a barber shop. And I guess they have gone into business and they have this new talk show called The Shop. And it's moving to HBO. It's on LeBron's website, apparently. But it's going to move to HBO, and it is a talk show set in a barbershop.
Sounds promising.
I think a real barbershop, and then they have guests.
Yeah, his friend Maverick Carter has been his number one friend slash agent slash representative for a long time, so Maverick's quite wealthy as well. I don't think this is just like, it's not like it's Maverick's barbershop and that's all he's got.
Right.
This helps confirm that this is another reason why he went to L.A., right?
Yeah, and I think the barbershop is out here in L.A., right? I think that's the case.
I think so.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think of that. We're in the new home of LeBron.
Yeah.
So HBO has ordered a handful of these shows. It's going to start shooting in Los Angeles at West Hollywood's Barber Surgeons Guild. That's the name of the barbershop. It started shooting. They started shooting last week, I guess, according to these dates. And it'll premiere on August 28th on HBO. So far, some of the first guests, LeBron's on the first 3 episodes, and they say they talk a lot about life, and he talks about parenting and everything, and it's okay. Barbershop talk, which Giorgio just loves barbershop talk whenever you get a bunch of old guys at a barbershop going back and forth. But who else do you think is going to be one of the first guests?
I saw the list.
Okay, let me think. If it's LeBron, David Blatt?
Mm-mm.
The Great Donovan!
Think more barbershop and cartoon characters you would find at a barbershop. And maybe also Pot. And also friend of Martha Stewart.
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg, right.
Snoopy Dogg.
I'm so in.
Yes, I would watch that.
Snoop Dogg at a barbershop.
Snoop Dogg at a barbershop. Yeah, especially they start trash talking each other in there and
start talking
laughing.
About teams. And boy, Snoop can throw out some hot sports opinions. Get him talking about the Steelers and their lack of offensive production.
Also, Odell Beckham Jr. It's going to be the first few episodes. WNBA star Candace Parker.
Oh, God.
What?
I'll get the lineup.
And John Stewart.
Okay.
Also says one of James's nemesis, Golden State Warrior forward Draymond Green.
I think that'd be interesting. Hear them in that setting.
Why hasn't anyone done this idea before now?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
I mean, in the community, think about how many black friends we have that talk about how when they would go to barbershops, that was just like, that was an event. Mm-hmm. They loved going there and hearing the old guys talk.
There's a barbershop scene in Uncle Drew. J.B. Smoove's in it.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Tell him about the legend of Uncle Drew.
And no one's done this idea before now. That's unbelievable.
Where's the location of this barbershop?
West Los Angeles. Let me find the name.
Because I need a haircut.
Oh, my gosh.
You want to go?
Mm-hmm. Craig would be the worst guy on that show.
I'd be the best guy ever.
No, you wouldn't.
We could totally hang out in that barbershop.
You could not hang with those guys at all.
Yeah. We used to play intramural basketball.
Yeah. We played basketball for a long time. I went to high school in South Dallas. I'd be the best.
You went to private school there.
So?
Which was an elite Catholic school.
I lived in Lancaster.
West Hollywood's Barber Surgeons Guild. If you want to Google that, that's where you can go. And then finally, I'm going to leave you with a little musical note. Pinchers the Korean is a frequent, funny tweeter and listener to this program. He turned me on to this dude called Dr. KC, and I can't believe I've never heard of him, because he's been doing this for years. He is looks like to be about a 60-year-old white-haired Indian doctor from the
from the
country of India.
Okay.
And he does songs that are popular in his own style. Now, here's one. I think you'll recognize this song. And it's such low production value. It's just him sitting in front of his computer trying to make out the lyrics on his computer screen and singing.
He's not really into it with dance moves.
No, he's not into it.
No stage presence.
Look how bored he looks here, Junior.
Oh, my God. He's not moving.
No.
Talking away, I don't know what to say. I'll say it anyway. Today isn't my day to find you shying away. I'll be coming for you, love, okay? Take on me.
It's a little bit more there,
take
sir.
Take me home. In a day or two.
Man.
I mean, and he's got, I'm telling you, he's got about 50 of these songs, and they're all so appallingly bad.
So why does he do this? Is he doing this to be funny, or did somebody find
these? I think somebody told him he was good, and that's why he does it. Turn it up here. This song, right?
There's no rhythm.
Look at how low energy he is.
So low energy. Looks about to fall
like
asleep.
I know. He looks like he's got narcolepsy. Oh, my gosh. What a bottom out that is. Okay.
Clear. So beat it. Just beat it. You better run, you better do what you can. Don't want to see no blood. Don't be much of a man. You wanna be tough, try to do what you can. So beat it. If you wanna be bad, just beat it. Beat it. No one beat it.
God. Could he be more unfamiliar with the song?
Yeah, he doesn't do a lot of studying. Uh-oh.
We're gonna get emotional here.
How
it's me. I was wondering if after all these years you'd like to meet, to go over everything.
This is Adele's hello.
This hello?
Time's supposed to hail, yeah. I can't turn my feeling. Hello.
Okay, he has more of a staccato delivery than Dan McDowell, and I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah. So do these videos get millions and millions of hits, or is he undiscovered?
Oh, yeah. No, no, no. He gets close to, looks like, 50,000 hits, 50,000 views. Forgotten is what he said there. It sounded a little bad. Yeah, he's great. His name is Dr. KC.
I'm in.
And Dr. K. Shantai is what he says. And so, yeah, you got to check him out. I'll tweet out a link to his YouTube page because you'll spend hours going down the wormhole and wonder why.
All right, Gordo, thank you. That's the corner, 934 on the ticket. David joins us next here from training camp. His observations.